Hello, and welcome back to the Neurotransmitters, a podcast about everything related to clinical neurology with the goal of reducing your neurophobia. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Kentris, and today we're talking with Kristen Beal about spinal cord injuries. Kristen is an author, illustrator, and literary scout for Morgan James Publishing, and an avid athlete participating in marathons and nationally competing in wheelchair fencing. Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today, and would you mind giving us a little bit of your backstory for our listeners?
Yeah, so I'll start off with my story of tragedy, and then I'll bring it back into how I am today, which is the complete opposite. So 17 years ago, in 2005, I was hit by a jet ski. I was 14 years old, about to turn 15, about to start my sophomore year of high school. And I went on the last weekend before the start of my sophomore year. I went to Lake Gaston with three of my friends, one that I had a really big crush on. You know, it was a fun weekend. And on the last day of the weekend, the guy that I had a really big crush on was driving another jet ski from mine, and he ran up into and on top of me and my friend who was the driver, killed the driver instantly, supposed to kill me. They told my parents, she's not going to breathe or talk or swallow, or she'll be a vegetable, all this stuff. I got a traumatic brain injury and a spinal cord injury, my T8 vertebrae, and they said, you know, she's not going to wake up. So, skipping forward a little bit, I did wake up. Here I am. I moved to a hospital in Richmond, Virginia, which is my home city. And I woke up and I started relearning how to live my life, how to do everything from brushing my teeth to sitting up in my chair to getting dressed, all that stuff. Skipping through a lot of pain and struggle, I made it. I'm good. And I have a T8 spinal cord injury. Like I said, I'm a complete injury, so that no feeling and no sensation below my injury level. And my right hand, it was a left side brain injury, so my right hand is a little bit slower. My circulation is a little bit worse. Not that big of a deal. So I get out of the hospital. They tell my parents and me at that point that she can do all that stuff that we said she's not going to be able to do. That's a miracle. But she's never going to move or feel below her injury level again, which again is more mid torso. And to me, that meant no more sports, no more running around, no more feeling the grass on the bottom of my feet, no more getting around my city with ease. And as a now 15 year old, I had my birthday in the hospital, now 15 year old, that completely broke me because that flipped my world completely upside down. So I started working. 2 weeks out of the hospital, I went to California. I started working to prove them wrong on that. And I was working out 4 hours a day, 5 days a week for a month and a half. Came back, I could wiggle my toes. So that's moving from complete to incomplete injury. I've been back there 9 times. I've gotten stem cells in the Dominican Republic. And I've just kind of never given up on doing all the good things for my body and my mind and my health. And I can move a lot, feel a lot. I can, you know, walk with a walker. I can crawl. I can do all this stuff, do all these awesome things. And like my bladder sensation is starting to come back a little bit, you know, 17 years later, which is something that the doctor said, you know, you got 1 year. After that 1 year, you're not going to get anything back again. So it's just been kind of almost 2 decades of like proving wrong and never giving up and working on myself and my body and my happiness to get where I am, and I can get into what I've been doing in the meantime too. And it just goes to show that the doctor, I mean, bless their hearts, they told me the worst case scenario, but they just gave me no hope. And they just like kind of talked very down on what your life is going to be and what you're not going to be able to do. And it was just kind of negative and can't. And that, thank goodness, didn't break me down. But that's kind of the thing that I always work for every day to say,
yeah,
you're wrong.
Like I said, just before we started recording, you know, that is one of the things that we kind of fall into the trap in, especially in the in hospital setting where things are very fresh and new. It's really challenging. I'm on a regular basis. I'm asked to come and prognosticate after just a few days after someone's had like a traumatic brain injury or a stroke or cardiac arrest and all these terrible situations where most of the time things don't go so well. But that's always, these are the cases that kind of keep you up at night. It's like, was I too hasty in saying what I said? And that's always the thing, right? We think about statistics, you know, statistically it's a, you know, 90%. Well, that means there's 10% that, yeah, that might do well. So it's important for us, I think, in the healthcare field to not negate those not insignificant numbers of people. But yeah, I mean, seeing that kind of recovery, especially going from, like you said, like a T8 spinal cord injury, and then starting to get some feeling and movement back there, that, as you said, like after a year, a lot of times you kind of expect neurologic recovery from a lot of etiologies to kind of plateau. I know you said you've like tried and done a lot of different things. What kind of activities or therapies do you attribute any one thing to kind of that, I would say, somewhat remarkable improvement?
Thank you. No, I don't. But there are a couple things I can boil it down to. Starting with California, that trip I took after I got out, I made working out my life. At the time, 2005, adaptive sports weren't really popular. No one really knew about it. So it was just kind of, before I got hurt, I was captain of my lacrosse team, field hockey, and competition cheerleading. So I was very active. And so I was paralyzed, and I said, I just lost it all. I can't do sports. You know, what am I going to do? So I turned working out into my hobby, and I made that my life for a couple of years, especially. And with that, the thing that goes with that is eating right, taking care of my body, taking care of my mind, making sure I'm in control of everything that I can be in control of, so I can regain control of, you know, my lower body. And so I would attribute it to moving and working out and, you know, moving around. And then so when in 2000, let's see, I think 2007, I did my first adaptive sport, which is skiing. And since then, I have tried 16 adaptive sports. I've done 16 marathons on a hand cycle. I've competed nationally in wheelchair fencing. I just kind of, I rediscovered my passion and my love for sports in the disabled version, which, in my opinion, adaptive sports are more fun than normal sports. I've done both, and I can say that adaptive sports are a lot more fun. They're more challenging, but they just look different and they're cooler. And they're, you know. Anyway.
Interesting.
So it's just constantly working on myself and making sure that I'm taking care of myself physically and emotionally, and making sure I'm happy and I'm getting all the things I need. That includes protein, and that includes like a break. You know, it spans the whole distance. So it's making myself number one. That's how I'm able to be the extremely happy person I am today.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
You've written a couple of three books?
Three books. No. And my fourth is coming out in February.
Awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I apologize. I did not have time from the time we initiated contact to now to read through them, but I have read through like a lot of your blog posts and so forth. And you do seem to approach everything with almost a impossibly positive outlook. How important has that mental health aspect been to you in your recovery and kind of going forward from there?
I was going to say exhaustingly positive, because that's key. That's key to get me to where I am now and going forward. And there's, you know, a new challenge. I'm not saying every day because my life isn't that hard, but there's a new challenge all the time. And so it's things that have a true contribute to that. One, first and foremost, is my faith in God. I woke up and my parents and my close friends were all surrounding me saying, this is what happened. Like, this is what they said you weren't going to be able to do, you know, breathe, swallow, all that stuff. And like, look at you now. I mean, you can hardly move your right hand and you can't move your legs. And like, you know, things are tough. That eventually got better. But, you know, look at what you can do. And this is kind of using comparison in a good way, which comparison is very rarely a good thing. But anyway, so using my faith in God is first and foremost. Surrounding myself with people who support me, who support my dreams, however crazy they could be. My first marathon in in 2011. For example, 2011 was New York Marathon. 2 weeks before the marathon, I received a hand cycle, and I was like, I don't know how long a marathon is, and like, I've never ridden this bike before, but let's go to New York. And so it's having people around me. I mean, that's kind of a crazy example, but having my parents around me who are just like, she's going to try it and she's going to do it. Mm-hmm. And like, let's give this a shot. And just again, comparison, seeing, which, you know, may or may not be good advice, but looking at like, this is what could have been, and this is how I am now. Like, let's focus on the good things that I have instead of getting all caught up in what I can't do, because that's a total waste of time. When I woke up from my coma after my accident, I was told, your friend died, first of all, and your other friend hit you. And, you know, just because he wasn't paying attention, he was looking elsewhere, so he hit you with this jet ski. And a lot of people ask me, like, how did you feel? Were you angry? Were you, like, upset? Were you, you know, angry, first and foremost? And no, I wasn't. For a couple reasons. One, my faith in God. I see he made a mistake. He's sorry for it. He didn't say he's sorry, but I assume he's sorry. And also, it's like, I can sit in this. I can dwell and sit in this. Or I can say, hey, I'm getting out of this hospital so I can go to California and I can, like, try to walk again. I can try to get start getting sensation back. And, like, it's just kind of a waste of time to sit in bad feelings. Easier said than done. But just focusing on what you do have and not spending your time sitting in a dark place.
No, I think that's great advice. And in terms of, you know, obviously made it through high school, made it through college. How do you feel like this experience changed your career trajectory or kind of how you envisioned your life as an adult and going forward? How has that played a role?
Big time. So I couldn't really tell you what I wanted to be when I grew up, when I was a teenager. Yeah. I don't really think I, either I don't remember or I didn't really proclaim, like, I want to be a whatever scientist. But I did go into college and I took a class my freshman year, on feature magazine writing, just like easy A for January semester. Not easy A, but it was something I felt like I could do, and it was something that interested me. So I'm like, I'll just have like a fun semester. And at the end of that semester, I published my first article in a magazine, which was a big deal. And it's like, I can do this. And so I changed around my majors, from actually English. It was English, but then I realized I don't like to read, literature. I don't like to read it unless I like to read it. And I went to clinical psychology. And that's where I found my passion. I found my passion in writing because I really liked to write and I saw that I could be successful with it. But then I majored in clinical psychology because I realized that I'm really interested in the brain and how it works and human behavior and like differences in human anatomy. And I kind of combined all those and I became an author. I published my first book in 2017 and I have two more books after that and another book coming out in January. And I kind of combined my passion, this book that's coming out, I combined my passion with clinical neuroscience and writing, because there's, you know, clinical neuroscience and thriller, because I like to read thrillers, so they're all in one book. It's going to be really fun. But I just kind of, I discovered that I have a story. I'm getting off topic. I'm sorry. I discovered that I have a story. I was given the story of my accident. And then I wrote about it to vent an easy A. So I thought it's not really that easy, but it was an easy A to me. I had this story and I started writing about it and I became an author, and that kind of just changed my whole trajectory of my career and what I want to do with my life, which is to write books and share my story.
Now, you've obviously piqued my interest, and I would assume some of our listeners. So tell me about this neuroscience thriller. I do want to hear more about that.
Oh, it's so good. So it's called Wide Awake. And you can get it on my website, which, you know, I'll talk about that later. But I'm not going to give anything away. I'm so excited about this. I have 12 inanimate objects. We have a bath towel, a pen, a notebook, not a notebook, a mug, a a tampon, an avocado. We have all 12 objects, and I've given them a personality, dreams and hopes and assumptions, and what they, and then the, kind of their experience too. So they all belong to the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the avocado is sent to, like, you're going through the experience of him being cut in two, you know, and then eventually something happens. I mean, you throw it away because it gets moldy, but like you read about like how it feels for him to get brown and like get moldy. And you know, you're just living the experience of these objects. They all belong to the same person. Her name is Madison, and she gets diagnosed with something. She gets a new diagnosis, which I'm not going to ruin it. So that's kind of the clinical psychology going in there. And then she does something in the end that makes the book a thriller. But it's really cool to like personify these objects that are in my everyday life. And I never think, what is the experience of this mug that I'm putting tea in? You know, does it like the hot water, or like, what does it feel? And then being able to use that imagination there and then also incorporate my psychology.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that's very interesting. I will have to check that out when is that coming out? Just
I'm going to get the book. It's going to be available. The books are going to be available for order off my website in February. And then in August they're going to be in bookstores.
Awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I will definitely keep an eye. I'll include, obviously we'll talk about it at the end, but I'll include some links in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
Now, looking back a little bit, at some of your, you know, you've been also in a, you know, kind of a modern Renaissance woman, if you will. Mm-hmm. I saw you've also been doing like some comic strips on Instagram as well. Am I remembering that right? Instagram?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it was kind of about dating as an adult woman in a wheelchair. And there seems like there were a lot of challenges in that arena.
To say the least. Yeah. So that was my second book. It's called Date Me. It's a comic book about dating in a wheelchair. What I did is I quit my job a month before my first book, Greater Things, came out. And I said, I'm going to be an author. Like, let's see how long this is going to last. Because it's kind of too good to be true to work for myself and whatever, support myself. So a couple months after Greater Things came out, the money started slowing down. And I said, I either got to get a job or I got to write another book. What do I do a lot of? I know a lot about that I can write a book. And it was go on first dates, specifically terrible first dates, dating.
Yeah.
We can all relate to that.
Sure.
But throw in the variable of a wheelchair. And I think that dating gets a little bit more difficult because guys get a little bit ruder. At least in my experience, guys just like get a little bit ruder because they don't really know how to handle someone in a wheelchair. And they think, I kind of learned that my wheelchair is a bigger deal than I thought it was to other people. Like, to a lot of people, it's something they have to get their head around, which in my opinion, it's like, I'm just sitting down. Like, I'm just like you. I'm just sitting down. It's not a big deal. But I learned when I started dating that it's not as no-brainer as I thought. So I went on 32 dates in 2.5 months, which is, I know, it's insane. It's lunch date, dinner date, you know, two different guys, four dates a week. Kind of at the point, I started off saying, I'm doing this because I'm dating, like for the reasons I want a relationship. I want, you know, someone. And it got to the point where I decided to write the comic book. And I was saying, you know, bring it on. You know, the worse you are, the better the story is. You know, kind of lost my will to be successful. And I was kind of searching for the story. And at that point I said, okay, I just got to cut this off. That's why I went to 32, not a round number, but 32 dates in 2.5 months, lost my mind. But at the end of it, I said, I'm deleting the app. I'm never dating again. I'm off of this. I published the book. I went home and I would change her names, make a comic about them, and then make a comic about the date, and then never, you know, never have to think about or talk to him again if I didn't want to. So it was very fun, and it's called Date Me, and it's very much like something we can all relate to, which is bad, hard relationships and dating, but with the spin of a wheelchair, so it makes it a little bit more more unique. But it's also, you can go through those dates with me and say, oh, that's happened to me. Like, she's just like me. She's just in a wheelchair. And there's just that little extra thing. So anyway, that came out. I got in trouble. By got in trouble, I mean, like, about 3 or 4 guys found out. Most of them I never talked to again because, yeah, you know, it's dating app. It's easy to not see them again. But I got caught maybe 3 or 4 times. And actually, I think 4 times. And some of them were cool with it. Like, cool, I get in the comic, but like a book. Like, thanks for changing my name. And one of them. So one of them, I forgot to change his name. Okay. It was just first names. His name was,
yeah,
I can't, Jack. Forgot to change his name. And he said, what the heck? All right. He bought the book. And then and then I brought it to him. And he said, what the heck? I never talked to him again. So it was fine. Anyway, not a great story. So then it turned into actually, it got picked up by Saltfire Studio, a production company, and they made episode 1 of a TV show based off the comic book. And episode 2 is still in the making, trying to raise money, trying to make that happen. But episode 1, if you search Date Me on YouTube, you can find someone who flew out from California across the country to play Kristen Biel. And we have, I got to cast all the dates and kind of relive the experience, but it was great because I didn't have to actually do it. My actress did. So, Date Me on YouTube.
Yeah, I did watch that. It was pretty good. I think it's got I got a lot of potential to keep going. It's certainly,
I sure hope
you
so.
Know, like you said, very relatable, and it is, I guess, kind of relating it to one of your articles that I read, where you're talking about like invisible versus visible disability, mm-hmm. and it does almost kind of, I hate to say, bring out the worst in people, because mm-hmm. whenever someone's on a first date, right, we're bringing our best self forwards, and sometimes that uglier side bubbles to the surface rather quickly.
More often than not.
Like.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate, but I guess on the plus side, you didn't waste a lot of time with people who weren't
exactly.
who weren't genuine.
Yeah.
but I understand that ultimately things did end well on the dating front.
Yes. So this is a story. So I was off the dating app and I was seeing this guy. Like, we had been on like 3 or 4 dates. It wasn't a big deal. I didn't like him that much, but you know, whatever. So I was dating him. And then at the same time, I went to church one day and running late to church, I always sit in the same, I'm a creature of habit. I sit in the same spot every week. Mm-hmm. I go to the same service. And one day I was running late, came into church. There was someone sitting in my seat. I'm calling him my seat. He is an attractive man sitting alone, so I'm at church. So I'm like, all right, his wife is at home, or he's saving the spot next to him for his girlfriend, because that just like didn't really happen that much. Just single attractive men at church. So anyway, I went and I sat next to him pretty much because it was next to my seat. And I think that I waited and I didn't say, like, you're sitting in my seat, what are you doing? He says that I said it in the first couple minutes of talking to him. And anyway, we met there, and then he, I was off the dating apps, like I said. We met there, and he came to a Bible study at my house that I was leading 2 weeks later. And, you know, we started talking, and he asked me on a date, and I said, I'm actually dating this other guy. And so, sorry, like, we can hang out, whatever. And then I kind of spent more time with him through the Bible study, and I realized that dating apps just aren't for me. This guy that I was dating wasn't really for me, and this guy is better. And here we are 3 years later, and we're married.
Congratulations.
Beautiful story. So there's a lot of lessons that could be learned. I'm not saying to learn them, but I'm saying, you know, I met him at church, and I met him off the dating apps, and I met him the normal way. I mean, the traditional way, but...
I tend to sympathize with you. My wife and I also met at a church group in college. So I'm biased probably.
Yeah. Like sometimes online works. I don't want to say don't do it, but
yes, church group. Yes, that's fair. Yeah. So you've been married for how many years now?
We got married in 21, last year. No, almost
year. Okay. Excellent. Mm-hmm. And is it fair for me to say on this venue that you're also expecting?
We are having a baby 4-5 days after our 2-year anniversary. Oh,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, this is kind of a unique situation for you compared to someone who doesn't have a spinal cord injury. Are you having to, like, is your OB considering you high risk, or is there any special precautions that you're having to take?
So I am high risk. Yes. They say it's because of thyroid, but I'm like, and also I'm paralyzed. Like, you don't have to beat around the bush, but yes, I'm high risk. And surprisingly, they actually gave me the choice. Do you want to have it naturally or C-section? And which I didn't think I could do because I don't have control to like push a baby out. But apparently your body does. I hope this is not going too in depth. But I'll be fast.
Sorry, it's a medically oriented.
Okay. apparently your body does the work for you, which is great. But I'm doing C-section because I want my bladder controlled, the little that I have. And that's all. I'm also delivering at 38 weeks instead of 42. Because they say I won't be able to feel the contractions. I think I will be able to, but sooner the better. So those are the only things, which I'm surprised because I thought it was going to be a much bigger deal. But
yeah, well, I suppose you're fortunate that you have said, you're very attentive to your health, to your nutrition, activity, all those kinds of things. So certainly just creating a healthy environment for the body otherwise, right?
I'm trying to be very, very careful to not like to be pregnant in the healthiest way possible so that I'm, of course, give birth in the healthiest way possible, but I'm watching what I eat a lot. I'm still working out. I'm still kind of going as much as my pregnancy allows, doing my life as normal. Trying to do it the right way, of course.
That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
And I do find it, like, how do I want to phrase it? Would you consider yourself primarily an author at this, like, self-employed author, or are you doing other work as well?
So I work as an author is my main job. I also have a part-time commission-based, I guess, job with my publishing company. When I was pitching them my third book, A Million Suns, they said, Kristen, your personality, the people that you talk to, would you like to come on board as an acquisition editor, which is just another word for literary scout? The people that I talk to in my life, because if you sit still for long enough, I'll start telling you my story and trying to tell you a book. And very often I try to hear other people's stories and I'm like, oh, that would be a great book. You should write it down one time write in the book. Now I can say, if you want to, I can help you submit your work and possibly get published with my company, who's Morgan James Publishing. So I work for Morgan James as an author and as a literary scout.
Very cool. And I saw that, again, a lot of your I would say, advocacy work has been like through the Christopher Reeves Foundation and things like that. Is that would you say someone maybe who's going through something similar has had a spine injury would be like a good resource to reach out to? What kind of things would you say, like, for someone who might be going through, or like if you were to talk to your teenage self from years ago, what would kind of be the recommendations in terms of how to comport yourself?
Definitely. I got a couple. First and foremost, don't listen to anyone who tells you can't do it, or this gives you some kind of permanence, like this is how you are going to be now, or don't listen to them, or listen to them and be motivated to prove them wrong. Because that is just the most limiting thing people can say. I think my doctors did their job in giving me worst case scenario, which it's to give someone false hope would be the wrong thing. But, if I could advise those doctors, I would say to tell your patient, this is what your body is right now. And this is maybe even like, this is what's normal for people with your body, but there's hope. Like, there's hope. You can do your own research. You can, like, figure out where the hope lies, because maybe they have a liability for saying that. But you could say, this is how it is now, but people have changed. People have improved. Things can always come back. Again, they told me the first year, you're like, if you get anything back, it's going to be the first year. 15 years down the road, I'm at 17 years now. 15 years down the road, I start getting my bladder sensation back. Which, if you talk to almost anyone with a spinal cord injury, they say, I'll take my bladder control over walking any day, like easy. So it's amazing that I'm still getting stuff back and I'm not working out 4 hours a day, 5 days a week like I used to, but I'm just like continuing to maintain my body healthy. So that's the advice I would give. And then number two, I would say, try everything. Try everything until you find your passion, until you find what you love, until you find something that your heart can really be in. Because I, both for hand cycling and for fencing, I signed up to try those just like on the fly, on a whim, because why not? For hand cycling, because I wanted to do a marathon, and I didn't know how long it was. I just thought it was cool to do a marathon. For fencing, I did it for the story for my third book, because if you look at me or if you know me or anything, you say she's not a fencer, because I'm like the softest person you'll ever meet. But then, like, get a weapon in my hand, get a sword in my hand, you know, I can win some medals. So it's trying everything, even though it seems very unlikely. But then, you know, I tried those two things, for example, and I love them, and I've put a big part of my life into them. So don't ever listen to people telling you you can't, and just try it no matter what.
Now, I know we touched on it a little bit, you know, in terms of kind of your interactions with your healthcare team, but what kind of, I mean, you know, obviously there was that period in the first few months there, but in your interactions with people in healthcare, what kind of misconceptions, presuppositions that proved to be wrong have you encountered, or kind of myths that you think need more dispelling in people who work in healthcare? Mm-hmm.
Well, the one thing I touched on is telling you you can't do stuff and limiting you. Mm-hmm. And more of, or less of, what they told me that was wrong, and more of what they didn't tell me. All the stuff that I've done, almost all the stuff that I've done post injury has been things that I found out about because I researched, or people told me about, and like people that I know. So I kind of got the feeling, at least when I was in the hospital, that it's kind of, here's your wheelchair, like drop you off at the curb and like have a nice life. It was a little bit more, obviously, because they taught me how to transfer and they taught me how to do wheelies, but it's like, it's just kind of, again, it's just kind of like drop you off, like have a nice life in your chair. So it's just kind of the ability, I didn't have the ability, the knowledge to dream beyond sitting in a chair and, you know, all day and not really doing much except for being in a wheelchair. So that's giving the hope of recovery, and that's giving the hope of happiness and passion. Like, hey, you're in a wheel. Maybe they could say you're in this wheelchair, you know, have a nice life, but like, you know, here are some sports, or here are some resources, or here's like a mentor and a group and a support and all that stuff. That's asking a lot of them, but
yeah,
you know, it's my
world. In terms of, I know, you know, 2023 is different than, you know, 15 years ago in terms of things available on the internet and information available. What role do you think that like in your experience, like these different advocacy organizations providing information to people who are new to being in a wheelchair or having a spinal cord injury, in terms of being sources of information, where would you recommend people reach out to? What kind of things have you found most useful in your experience?
Well, very good question. I would recommend you going to the Chris Reed blog and searching Kristen Beal, because I realize, I don't want to pat my back, but I've realized what information is needed and what kind of hope. So my articles are all, you know, you guys listening know me well enough to know right now that my articles are all oriented to like, life is great. Like, it's really fun. Even though you're in a wheelchair, like, here's how to be like an awesome person in a wheelchair versus like a sad clown. So my articles were all like how to find happiness and how to find peace and how, what like things to do, you know, in your chair. So it's, I try to put, and now I'm doing a pregnancy with like paralyzed and pregnant. It's a series and started last month. Because when I got pregnant, there was nothing out there. Like, I couldn't find anything out there. And then related, when I search for things on the internet of like something to give me hope or, you know, encouragement or something, I didn't really find anything. So I'm trying to put the stuff out there that I see that there's a loss of. I'm not saying there's nothing, but I'm just saying there's not enough. So blogs, the Chris Reed blog, is a good start. But there, if you're a YouTube person, there I'm finding some YouTube things out there, especially for pregnancy, for being disabled and pregnant, which is kind of where all my free time, all my free research goes to right now. But there are some resources out there, but just not enough.
That's fair. Yeah, that's why I was so curious myself, as someone who hasn't dug into that particular arena.
People tend to be very sad and kind of pessimistic and kind of woe is me, that my experience, what I found. And so I'm with my books and with my articles and just with like podcasts and just my persona, who I am, I like to put a spin on it of, you know, we look different and we move around differently. Right. But like, we're great. Like, we're just people and we're just, you know, living. So that's something I also try to do with my weekly comics is to, I have weekly comics on Instagram and newsletter that kind of, I do topics that, I make it funny because they're comics. I do topics that are relatable, kind of like dating in a wheelchair, but it's not all about dating, but kind of relatable. So it's kind of, I'm in this situation as Kristen in a wheelchair, but like I could be any other person, and kind of put a humorous spin on life, because you have to kind of break the stigma by making people laugh or making people say, oh, wow, me too.
And that, again, my experience working in neurology, you know, we do see a lot of people with different types of, you know, kind of chronic problems, whether that's paralysis from a stroke or people with epilepsy, things like that. And it does seem that when someone finds out about your diagnosis, whether that's something that's readily visible or not, that it people kind of default to pitying someone. And I imagine that's probably not the experience. That's probably an unpleasant experience, I would expect.
It's a common response, and maybe, who knows, but maybe before I got injured and if I grew up an able-bodied person, I would have the same response. So I can't, because I didn't have very many disabled people in my life. Didn't have any reason to be very exposed to disability. And so it's understandable response, but it's also not frustrating, but it's also a little bit tiresome sometimes, because it's kind of like, wait, why are you saying aw when I'm talking about, you know, something so basic? I mean, that just people say aw, and I'm like, why are you feeling bad for me? Like, I'm just, you know, we all have struggles, and I don't need your pity. I don't really want your pity. I just like, treat me like you're equal instead of somebody who you're just like, oh, sad.
Yeah. Like, that's always a good.
You do that, like saying, giving me your pity is great and it's nice, whatever. But it's, you don't realize is like, in my opinion, I'm happier than you. I probably got a better life than you. Like, I'm the happiest person that I know. I mean, that sounds like, but like, I'm the happiest person that I know. And like, things are going great because I make them great, and because I set myself up for happiness and success, that my life is awesome. So why are you kidding me? Don't do that.
It's great to have that outlook. And yeah, I imagine you know, even on my very low scale, when, you know, when I've had something bad in my own past experience and someone said like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, I'm like, well,
why?
don't be. Yeah, you didn't have anything to do with it. It's I'll be fine eventually. But yeah, we should always just treat people kind of the golden rule, right? The way you would like to be treated.
Yeah. Like, my struggle that you feel however you feel about it is what makes me, like, in my opinion, a great person. Like, I'm a stronger person and I'm so much better because of the struggle that I've gone through. So don't be sad that I went through it, because it's, my accident is one of the greatest things that's ever happened. Not the greatest. I'm so thankful for it, because it just made me into the person I am today. Which I'm happy with.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing outlook to have. Any other final thoughts for the audience, things that they should know about people who have had spinal cord injuries or people who have recently undergone them that we haven't touched on yet, that you think are kind of essential to making a successful life for yourself?
Reiterating a little bit, and definitely being very cliche, but the main message I'm saying is don't give up, which is the cliche part, but to go forward of like, don't let other people push you into giving up. Don't push yourself into, don't give yourself excuses so that you will give up on something, and just keep going for it. Just set goals in your mind and just figure out, here's what I need to do to get here, and nothing's going to stop me, because this goal is something that I want, and whatever you need to do to find your happiness. So just orient your whole life toward, your whole life toward just being happy and just being well in your mind and body, and treating people right, and just being a good person. Simplifying it a lot, but just don't give up toward that goal of it.
Awesome. And where can people find you online? I know you're all over the place.
I'm all over. Well, Chris Reeve, if you search Kristen Beal, first of all, that's my articles. To go off that, kristenbeal.com. I have 3 books, 2 books and a comic book. And then my 4th one coming out in February. Very excited about that.
Excellent.
I'm Greater Things Comics on Instagram is where I have weekly comics that come out every Tuesday. And then to throw a little wrench in it, I'm actually married now. I went over that. So Kristen Gupta, GUPTA on Instagram. That's my personal Instagram that I would love to have anyone follow if they want to check out my life and just me blasting happiness and positivity exhaustingly everyone. But also very real, whatever. So Kristen Gupta and KristenBeal.com, and you know, they're all kind of landing pages for each other. So anywhere.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today, kind of sharing your experiences. And yeah, I really appreciate
it. Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you again to Kristen for joining us today. And I can say that since the time that we have recorded this, I did go on Amazon and pre-order her new book, Wide Awake, which should be coming out August 15th, 2023. You throw the words neuroscience and thriller together, and you've got at least one sale in me. If you've made it this far, I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and if so, please leave a 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. These really help getting the show noticed and help boost us in the algorithm. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes, and you can reach me on Twitter at drkentris, that's Dr. Kentris, or by email at theneurotransmitterspodcast@gmail.com with any questions or show suggestions. We'll see you next time.